Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening to all the people listening to the Wise Women Media Radio Show for our installment for tonight, May 3rd, 2013. And we have a special guest tonight, Jennifer Sullivan. She is currently the co-chair of the Green Party of Florida. She's going to be talking to us about grassroots activism that she's been involved with for a very long time, about the Green Party and the upcoming statewide meeting that's going to take place in Tampa on Memorial Day weekend. So let me start off the show by playing one of her favorite songs, Corporate Cannibal by Grace Jones. This is the Bug Mix. That was Corporate Cannibal by the great Grace Jones. I'm not sure what year that came out, but it's not that old of a song. And that was the Bug Mix. I wanted to thank our sponsors before we get started with the show. Our sponsors are Daughters of Isis, Florida Nature Photos, Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio, Power New Media and Public Relations, Roundtree 7, Tarot and Stars, and the Hoodooed Blog. And you can see links to all of our sponsors at our website, wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. And we're also tweeting at Wise Women Media, hashtag Wise Women Media. So feel free to drop us a line, give us suggestions for show guests, topics for our shows, or any other information at wisewomenmedia@gmail.com. Also, at any point during the show, if you would like to call in and ask questions of the guest or have some information that you'd like to share, we are currently in the chat room, so if you're on the Blog Talk Radio page, refresh your page if the chat box isn't coming up. It will come up when you refresh the page. The chat box is open. And you can call us at any time at 213-816-0357. Again, 213-816-0357. And I'm going to bring Jennifer on the air. One moment.
Hello.
How did you like that mix of the song?
You know, that I missed it.
Yeah, that was, well, you can hear it on the archive. That's it was Corporate Cannibal, but it was called The Bug Mix, which was a little bit shorter than the original song. But anyway, I want to welcome you to the show, and we have so much to talk about, especially with the upcoming meeting.
Oh, yeah.
You let our listeners know a little bit about yourself and what brought you to the Green Party. What was the catalyst?
Well, I've been involved in the first political thing I did was age 16, and it was Ralph Nader had these petitions. We were going around getting people to sign to stop nuclear power plants from being built in the United States, which, you know, didn't work. But that was my first experience with going out and getting petition signed for something political. And I've just been involved in various things throughout my life. And one of the things I did find was that the Democratic Party, I saw that with the way they didn't support Eugene McCarthy and the way they didn't support George McGovern, that I saw that they were just, you know, the whole thing of their platform was just talk. They didn't really support their platform. They just had people kind of entrapped in there. They had women and unions and people of color and the working class, so to speak. And they've only just grown more corporate than ever. At least, you know, back then they kind of put on, you know, a sort of facade about being that. But now they're not even really, you know, other than Obama's talking about the middle class, but he never talks about the underclass. So anyway, that's it. Just evolved from there. I went independent right after the 72 election, and then I have been just looking around. And in 1996, I found out about the Green Party. And I looked at their platform. I thought, man, I could have wrote that. So I think I've been able to incorporate all the different things that I am involved in with the Green Party platform. And later we can get to more specifically what really fires me up about a lot of things, which, you know, Corporate Criminal was a great lead in.
So what's your take on Citizens United? I mean, I know that you're pretty much along the same lines as my thoughts, which is move to amend. That's really our only choice at this point. Some people are calling for a constitutional convention. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, I actually, right after Citizens United happened, I organized a lobby where we went in to see both senators and all the representatives for the state of Florida at the time and D.C. in the D.C. office, and we spent a week, five weekdays in the Capitol. and managed to get in to see almost all of them and then some extras as well. You know, it was like Kendrick Meek and Kathy Castor were the only holdouts. We actually got into, finagled our way in to see the Republicans that were kind of blowing us off. But I started like in February to make appointments with them, with their aides, and just to talk to them about getting 100% public funding for all elections. So that's what I'd like to see. It's, I mean, Move to Mend is also a great vehicle, but I think that we should be pushing to get the political bribery out of the political scene. I mean, it's gone way beyond anything that we should ever tolerate. It's just the fact that we can go on. I can go on and on about this, but I mean, it's just the corporations, the pharmaceutical prices are jacked up. As you know, that there's no closure for things. Like BP is still, they're kind of lollygagging, using their, you know, lawyers to stall and not pay. And I mean, that's what they did. That's what Chevron did when they bought out Texaco, and they did the same thing in Ecuador with the spills that they had all over that country. And so,
yeah,
I mean,
the corporatism just goes on and on, and it's unabated and it's with impunity. And I don't, you know, I look around and most of the people that I speak with about this just look at me like I have two heads and disregard it. It's almost like, you know, we're such a consumer society and people don't get it. You know, a lot of people don't get it. I can't say all, but a lot of people don't get it. And I like
we're
the Green Party
be
because the Green Party promotes the local green businesses, less corporatism, less, I mean, corporations aren't bad, but corporations are bad when they're doing the things that they're doing now with impunity. That's when they're bad. But
yeah, when they overstep their bounds and become people, that's the difference.
And when money is free speech. So
right.
I think that Grace Jones song was so fitting. And, of course, Grace Jones being an American but not even living here, she sees things from the European point of view, and she I saw a video right before the show started of her performing that song. I think somewhere in England, I can't remember the venue, but she had a big yellow dress on. Dresses pretty flamboyantly, and it had like
she always does
dollar signs all over the dress. So. She definitely gets the idea from listening to the lyrics of that song. So tell our listeners a little bit about the Green Party's platform. When I look at the platform, I see most of the points there are what most Americans want. Why are we falling short on getting more people to join the party? I think we could have a lot more people if they knew what the platform said and knew what the party was about. But
absolutely. Getting the word out is the hard part because we're up against the corporate media, and that's the problem. Because, and again, it's like I'm not anti-corporate per se. I mean, people shop at them, they work at them, they invest in them. So, I mean, I'm not. It's just when they overstep their bounds to start, you know, getting the rights of people, using all the money that they get. I mean, that what they do is they just bust in with, you know, flopping $100,000 on a congressman's desk and saying, pass this bill. They write the bills, and then they actually, you know, tell the congressman, if you don't do it, I'll give this to your opponent. And, I mean, but the thing is, that bill will save them. They spent $100,000, but it'll save them millions and billions.
Right.
So the investment, they say the best return on their investment is the United States government. So anyway, the Green Party, I mean, yeah, that's, most people would, if they only knew, they would agree that, you know, it's party of common sense and good conscience.
Right.
And,
in other words, if you're voting for a Green Party candidate in any office, from presidential all the way down to local, you know that you can vote your values. Voting is supposed to be voting for your values. You're voting for that candidate because he upholds the same values that you do. That's the key. And I think many that vote have lost the complete message of why it is they're voting. I hear statements all the time, oh, but so-and-so raised more money than so-and-so over here, and this person, they wear really good suits, and they just have a nice presence. And I've even heard, wow, that mm-hmm. Mitt Romney, he's really handsome.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, we had the two Ken dolls, you know, the black one and the white one in the last election. And, people are voting like that, and they're also, I mean, their priorities are kind of messed up, but they vote against their own best interests from both directions. I mean, it's like the Tea Party people and the left people. I mean, they are voting for something that they wish would be, and it's not. I mean, the two political parties right now that are running this country are totally beholden to corporations. I mean, that's been the case, and Nader talked about that in 96 and before, and he's still talk about it. It's only gotten worse, but it's one of those things like Thomas Paine, he wrote in his famous Revolutionary War era pamphlet, Common Sense, that
right.
The long habit of thinking a thing wrong gives it a superficial appearance of being right. So people have this idea of what they think their party that they're voting for is going to do, and they hope that it will, and then they somehow, when it doesn't happen, they go into some sort of Stockholm syndrome or something. They just deny it. They act like, well, no, everything's good, because they've picked a winner, and they're happy to win, in thinking, well, this person has a chance to win, and instead of, like you say, voting your values, voting your conscience, voting in your own best interest, thinking about, you know, your children and your children's children, and that's another thing that people are they're thinking about today, and they're struggling, and without any thought to, like, it could be even worse in the future if they don't start paying attention, but they'd rather kind of not pay attention and wish it would just go away. Watch enough TV, and you know, and that's why they call it programming.
Yeah, somebody told me that, and I thought, wow, that makes perfect sense, programming, because
mm-hmm.
the shows are programming, and they've lulled so many people to sleep or brainwashed people into believing that these are how elections are conducted. It's a survival of the fittest. Whoever raised the most money is
mm-hmm.
the candidate that the people will love. So even the elections being it's just like throwing money at the cult of personality, whoever that may be. I feel that at this point it's time to get the people's candidates, whether they be green. I would like to see all of them be green, of course,
uh-huh.
but there's greens,
sure.
good libertarians, there's good constitutionalists, there's good NPAs and independents. Get
uh-huh.
them, if they're, you know, I can say this to the audience, if they're your values, if they uphold your values, get them in your local office, in your local office, your city, you know, your city commissioner, your county commission, your boards, your independent boards. Get these people in there. Vote them in. You don't need that much money to run a campaign. You really don't. And
that's true.
Not for a local campaign, yeah.
Right, and the coalition, the coalition of, you know, if you have a good candidate, even a different party, a different voice is going to be better. The more voices that can enter the dialogue, better off we all are, because
right.
more ideas get put out, more things get exposed. If we don't have someone in there that's, you know, as long as people are in government that kind of work together and shake each other's hands and pretend they put on a pretense of, you know, not really you know, thinking the same way, when really they know that they're in there for power, and that's what they really want. So we need people that really want to serve. Get back to the people that feel compelled to get in to office to make a difference. I mean, it sounds kind of, what, Pollyanna, pie in the sky, but you know what? People need to raise their expectations. I find in my life that I make better choices for myself in a lot of things that I do. And I wish more people would do that. I think people get before they even start. And that's one of the big things is a lot of people don't even bother to vote. So we have a very low voter turnout. So.
You know, I heard a number in this last presidential election. I don't know where I heard the number or whether it's even accurate. I just can't remember the source. But I heard that only 17% of Americans voted in the presidential election.
Yeah.
So if that number's correct, then that means there's a lot of people sitting it out and realizing that their vote doesn't really matter.
Well, yes. And one that I do know, I know that it was around, it was like 33% back in 2000 in the famous Bush versus Gore, where the Green Party was blamed for, you know, affecting the votes, you know, and boy, thanks for all that power. We've had it. But in any case, if you look at it that way, you had a 30 to 33% turnout. That means that, you know, roughly 70% of the people didn't even vote. So what you had was a pretty much dead heat between, you know, let's say it was 30%. That means 15% of the people, 16% of the people of the whole country voted for everyone, voted for the 100%. And when you look at it that way, it's pretty, I don't know, it's just shameful. We should actually, I would love to see if we would have compulsory voting like they do in Australia. Where if you don't, you know, if you just got to go in and vote. Otherwise, it costs you. You know, it's $20 if you don't vote. And make it easier. Make it a holiday. So it is easier for people to get out and vote. So it isn't a hardship because, as it is, a lot of times people don't vote because they can't. They can't afford to get to the polls or they can't get off work. I mean, there's valid reasons why some people don't vote, but we do have the, you know, the voting ahead of time. And the interesting thing was when I saw people voting, like, you know, early in the early elections, there was these long lines. And when I actually went, and I'm thinking, oh, brother, and I never had time to stand in that line. So then election day came, and I go, well, I got to go vote now. So I went to vote, and I got right in. So actually, election day, it goes pretty quick if you... You know, if you have enough machines and they want to take a serious vote, you know, with people.
I think with the last presidential election, one of the things I noticed was there were one or two early voting places in each county, which is just not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And those, like you said,
right,
those were ones that were flooded with people. And then, you know, a lot of the suppression of the vote goes on, too.
Sure.
Which means, you know, I know here in Pasco County, which is north of Hillsborough County in Tampa, they actually cut out some of the precincts. And a lot of the precincts that they cut out were in the African-American neighborhoods. So automatically, I mean, since... Most African Americans have a history of voting democratically, and most everybody knows that they were, you know, that many of the people in the communities were going to vote for Obama. Then the powers that be just said, okay, well, we'll fix them. We'll just cut out some of the precincts. So this means the vote was suppressed in regards to the older people that might not be driving anymore, which, of course, older people, and anybody that had to get on a bus and use public transportation. This became a difficulty if they had to go further or if they didn't know where their precinct was or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So I attended a meeting with another person that we both know, John Russell, and where the supervisor of elections of Pasco County was discussing the elimination of the precincts. And it was very clear what was being done. And of course,
or less machines. You know, they'll have like one or two voting machines and they don't work properly and in the poorer districts. And then the wealthy districts, they have like 10 machines that are all just, and can zip those people right through. Yeah. There's a lot to be done in this country as far as voting that could be better.
Yeah, well,
and this, yet we should not
we
give
know
up.
That, you know,
the overgrow the vote.
The voting is skewed, you know, and probably not accurate. And we've had, I think it was in 2000, 6 million people didn't get on the rolls. And there was millions more in 2004 and onward. So as much as they can say they improve it, it's like two steps forward and then eight steps backward.
So we just
go on. So my point is just get the people that you know are upholding your values into local office. And if you can't find anybody to run, then run yourself.
And get into that
local office where most of the policies in your that will affect your local area will be made at that level anyway.
That's true. And, you know, I mean, the other thing is that given the fact that these elections go the way they do when only maybe 15% or 17% of the people are actually even making the decision for a certain candidate, you know, and leaving out, I mean, and people aren't voting. I mean, that's the difference. If people really do need to just step up and get out and vote, get an absentee ballot.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
That's another option. And, you know, then we could conceivably win. I mean, if you think about it, if we had, like, all these people voting for Bush and Gore, and then the other 70% had turned out and voted for Nader would have won. So, I mean, that's the way we got to look at things, is that, you know, what really can we do about it? And that's one of the things we can do about it, is just take it more seriously. And I've had people talk to me and say, well, I'm not political. But then if you look up the word, a definition of the word political means astute and looking out for one's own best interests. So it's not a good thing to say, oh, I'm not political, because then you're basically saying, I don't know how to look out for my own best interests.
No, it's funny. Adam Kokesh, the libertarian, he said something very similar. He said, oh, you don't do politics? He said, well, if you don't do politics, politics will soon be doing you.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was a pretty classic quote. I don't know if it was his, but, you know, he sure said it with a great feeling in one of his spoken things on YouTube. So I wanted to ask you, you know, since we're talking about voting and the Green Party, and where would you like to see some changes within the Green Party at the national level with 5 years? What do you think could be changed right away?
Well, I think one of the things that's actually happened, it's been something, a dream of mine for a long time, was to see a shadow cabinet. Because people know that there's the Green Party president, and they got a vice president they're running with, and then that's all they really know, if they even know that. But, I mean, with some digging, and Jill Stein was very popular, especially like with young people and college campuses. She'd gotten more exposure on, you know, national TV, I think, she would have done really well could very well have won, because she would get people stimulated and excited about voting again. However, just when you have something like what they've just developed, which is a shadow cabinet, you get an idea of more depth. Instead of just saying, well, here's the president and the vice president, now you've got, okay, who would the Green Party put in their cabinet? Who would be their attorney general? Who would be in, you know, I mean, what they've done is they've put out the shadow cabinet, which is at greenshadowcabinet.us. And you can look up and see the people that are involved. Dr. Margaret Flowers, involved with healthcare. And then you've got Richard Wolff, who
is
a
for economics, dude.
Yes.
He's amazing.
I mean, these are people, and, you know, and I mean, I had thrown out some of my own ideas. You could get Nader as attorney general, and you could get, you know, Joseph Stiglitz involved, and people that are that have their own, you know, that they have their own point of view. They're good at what they do, but they're not influenced by money. They're not working for someone on the side and doing speeches for large, you know, corporations or ultra wealthy people pushing an agenda. You know, like ALEC, that group, or the Koch brothers, and so on. They're independent, and not everyone on the shadow cabinet is necessarily a green, but it's they mostly are progressive. But there's a mix of there's NPAs, libertarians, and independents. So, I mean, that's not all green, but a lot of them are green. And I wish more people would declare themselves as being green. However, oh, yeah, Jeff's calling me now.
There's a lot of people that, of course, we've probably worked with in the past as far as political people that we would like to see as green. But a lot of them have a party loyalty and probably will never change their party. You still with me?
Yes, I am. Yeah. I mean,
I'm thinking, for instance, like, you know, Dennis Kucinich and I had been on his staff in the 2008 campaign. And, you know, that's just, you know, that's something he would never do. I don't think he'll ever leave the Democratic Party, even though almost all of his
policies. They left him. Like Cynthia McKinney said, because I didn't leave my party. They left me.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, most of his policies and his take on the issues and everything were green. Everything was green.
Oh, absolutely. And they treated him shabbily.
I would really like to see some of those people that have stepped back from politics, whether they wanted to or whether they were kind of forced to, you know, to resurrect again. Maybe they can do better work being out of Congress or Senate or wherever they were. That's kind of my take on it. Once you're out of there, you're not held to those restrictions and those expectations that your future is really open. So
yeah.
I would like to see some more come.
But to have the courage, too, to run as a Green and to say, you know, really I'm aligned with these values and it's about time I admit it. You know, instead of trying to turn these parties from the inside, because it just doesn't work. There's too much pressure coming from the outside with money and getting back to that again. And, I mean, they toy with these issues. You know, they bring up, oh, gay rights, let's gay marriage, let's let that happen. And they plod along and, like, throw bones here and throw bones there of immigration. And but they really don't want to do solid action. You know, it's coming from the states. I mean, like, the, you know, decriminalization of medical marijuana, for one thing. I mean, that's something that's coming from the states, and it's you know, something the federal government, I think, actually wants to fight. It seems like Obama's administration, I mean, he went down to Mexico and Costa Rica and doing this and trying to reinforce the drug laws and that's something that's just going nowhere, this prohibition and a plant that's illegal. If you step out of it and think about it, it's like it's just a plant, and why is it illegal, you know? Meanwhile,
Chris Rock said something about that. He said it's okay to be on drugs as long as it's their drugs. He said
right.
The happy drugs that you see commercials for on television where people are skipping through the daisies and stuff like that.
Yes.
He said those drugs are okay, but marijuana's not. So
yeah. And that's the scary thing is that those drugs that they're skipping through the daisies with on TV can be pretty lethal. I mean, there are a lot of them are untested in the United States. In Europe, they have to test you know, before they put something on the market, they test it, make sure it's safe. Well, here we put it on the market and done well, and now people are dying. We'll pull it off. You know, we're, like, we're the guinea pigs. And that, another thing is immunizations. I mean, that it's amazing that children by the age of 18 are subjected to 75 different, you know, immunizations. You know, they'll get like a combination of, you know, diphtheria, pertussis, and so. But the thing is, it's escalated from when my kids were in school. It was probably about 8 to 16 shots that they had to have. Now it's 75, and they want to double it. And the other thing along with that is they're forcing people in the military to get these immunizations. They're forcing people in the medical industry, like nurses and so on, to get these to work. And the pressure is coming from pharmaceuticals soon to, if you want to go out in public, if you want to be a teacher, you're going to have these. If you're, you know, and we're losing our freedom to decide, do I even want this stuff injected into my body? You know, to me, I try to eat healthily and nutritiously, and, you know, you are what you eat, and try to eat the right foods and stay healthy and, you know, take the right minerals, vitamins, and supplements and so on. But, you know, why would I want to inject anything? I've never injected anything in my body. I mean, other than, you know, when I had my children shot. But there was probably, maybe you had to get about 8 when I was a child, you know, polio and, you know, and so on. But that's just crazy. And it's getting harder and harder for mothers to fight it off. They used to be able to fight it off for philosophical or religious reasons, but they're even going after that now. And,
yeah, the shots in the military, I remember, you know, going through a gauntlet of, it was when I was in basic training, going through a gauntlet of, they were the air guns. And I think I got something like 10 on each arm. I don't even know what I got, but I just know very quickly afterwards I was very sick. I was probably sick for a good 3 days. So it did give me the flu. And the vaccinations were just par for the course. If you didn't get them, you couldn't get through basic training.
And now, as a medically licensed
person in the state of Florida, I have to have a TB time test and reading annually. But the only other thing that they require, and you can opt out on it, is Hep C? Remember, I can't remember, but it's a Hep C, I think. And it's an immunization, and you do have to fill out a paper to opt out. And of course, I opt out every time, every year. But those nurses that were just affected by those laws just recently were nurses. I can't remember what state, but they were told that they needed to take a flu shot, and they said, "No, we're not taking it." And they were RNs, and they were literally fired for that. I don't know what the law was.
That's what's coming down the pike. It's, you know, they're going to start forcing more and more people to do this. And, of course, the people that can avoid that are the CEOs and the, you know, the generals and so on. But, I mean, and they've also done this, and there's, of course, history on this, and it was a lot of times with the African Americans, but they do it with prisoners, too. They use basically as guinea pigs.
People need to know this, that if you're put on a drug that's being tested, you will have to log into a specific account on the manufacturer's website, and then you log your side effects on this thing. And, you know, when you took the pill and what your side effects were and how long afterwards did you have the side effects. So they're not doing these testings through clinical trials or anything. If you're put on the drug and you elect to be put on this drug that's under experimentation and research and development, then you are essentially the guinea pig. You are the one. And I've had patients that have done this. They were taking, what's the new drug to stop smoking? Chantix or something? But the one particular patient that I'm thinking of as I state all this was on like 25 other things, and this guy was in his 50s, and he was already, you know, falling asleep in the rocking chair. And I thought, this is a young, vibrant man who had a car accident, who's all of a sudden on all these drugs, and now with this drug, they're taking advantage of him almost. You know, you need to quit smoking, so let's, you know, we'll give you this for free if you test it for us.
Yeah.
But he's already on, like, 20 other things for pain and, you know.
It's amazing that they don't have to have, like, a clear, you know, like, a lot of times for testing, they have to have something clear. You know, I mean, it is to quit smoking, but you know what I mean? It's like you're not really supposed to be taking things. But I wonder how much that follows through, you know. I mean, I wonder how thorough they really are in that.
I don't think they check a lot. And a lot of times people are on specific things that they shouldn't be on because whatever else they're taking, it's a very virulent cocktail of that are having side effects with one another. You know,
right.
That are just bad combinations. It's, you know, drug cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had that with my patients, too. I've seen that. So, you know,
yeah,
I'm not, I'm the one that has a lot of knowledge about a lot of this, but as a CNA, I can't order them to stop taking their medicine.
Right.
I have to encourage them to go see the doctor. The doctors get the kickbacks on the medicine, so they continue to prescribe. So it's a very dangerous, precarious situation anybody is in these days when they get sick. Very, very dangerous. And you really have to think for yourself. And if they give you a drug, then you better know the side effects and know why they're giving it to you. You know, you have to be responsible for your own health care, and you have to ask the questions. Because if you just... You blindly follow what the doctor says, you may be on a very slow road to your own demise, you know?
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is that getting sick is so costly. I mean, medical care should be a right, should be something. I mean, that's one of the things the Green Party, getting back to the Green Party, that's one of the things that we believe, is that health care is a right. I mean, there's just a lot of things that we feel is right. I mean, the First Amendment right is my free speech is the most important to me. But there's also a lot of rights besides just the Second Amendment. And sometimes there's an assumption that because, you know, we are anti-violence, that we're anti-guns. And it's like, well, we understand that there's a Second Amendment right for people that must have them, but it's also... It's so off the rails with the NRA. I mean, they have so much influence, and they're just, I mean, inherently evil. I mean, some of the machines, I see some of these gun magazines that people get, and I've seen the covers of them, and it's just, it's flabbergasting to see these huge things of these, and they clearly say on the cover of, you know, like this mega, you know, rifle in his gun office. You know, it's ready, you know, for military action. And it's like, but these people are just, you know, buying them on the streets and at gun shows and things. And it's like, why do you need something like that? And some of them want to hoard the guns and, you know, take on the government. The government's not going to get my guns, I'll say. And it's like, oh, really? So you're going to take your guns. You're up against the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, Marines, the FBI, you name it, the police forces and stuff. I mean, we do have a developing police state, but still, you're not going to be to try to take that on in weapon per weapon. You know, nobody really has that capacity to be able to do that. So, I mean, the better direction would be to like change the paradigm and get away from the violence and trying to, you know, outgun the next person and start thinking of like human rights as, you know, civil rights and, you know, indigenous people's rights, women's rights, youth rights.
Right. Now, see, I'm looking at
decent education to where they can actually, you know, go to school without a debt. Around their, to be a, a worker slave is to try to pay off their education.
The education is the next, they say that's the next housing bubble. And really that was the beginning of Occupy, when there was two things that spurred Occupy on.
Right.
And one of them was, debt from the education, and the other one was home foreclosures. Those two economic catalysts are really what got Occupy going to begin with. People had just had enough. On the guns, I agree with you to a certain point. I do believe if you check history, you will see that almost any society or culture that had their leaders restrict their gun rights and use ended up in, huge, huge trouble. And there was...
That didn't happen in Australia.
It happened in Khmer Rouge, in the Soviet Union. There were in the Third Reich in Germany. Just three examples. But if you go into history, I believe in the Second Amendment, and I believe there's a reason why that Second Amendment is there. And granted, we need. And specific checks. Yes.
I think
our government's gone a little overboard on that.
But that's one of the things that people feel so strongly about, and yet they don't feel as strongly about some of the other rights that we should be thinking about. So that's where I'm saying. I'm not I'm going to say that there's consumer rights.
Right.
That people should be just as adamant about that. We want to know that there's GMOs in our food. We want product labeling, and that's, there's no uprising for that. And so that's what I'm saying. I'm acknowledging that it's a right, but I'm also saying that it shouldn't be the biggest right. It's kind of like saying, well, abortion's the biggest sin. Go ahead and, commit larceny. Go ahead and, murder people by default, having a product on the market that is going to kill people, like cigarettes or just dangerous jobs when you have a coal mine that you've invested in and that it's dangerous, going to what's happening in Bangladesh with the way they've treated workers. I mean, those are the things. Human rights are things that people should really be a lot more concerned about, and there are people that are concerned about them, that activists will go out and try to raise awareness and so on, but the average person, they're more interested in I need my guns, and that's what I find disturbing, because they don't mind that they're losing their job, they're working twice as hard for less money, things like that seem to be they'll kind of grumble about it, but what they really fight for, instead of fighting for a union, they're going to fight for being able to buy as many clips as they need. That's what I'm saying. It's just gone again. It's like corporations aren't a bad thing until they start running everything. Then that's when they get beyond the point of just being a service for people and a place where you could work and in a place to make money, to where that's like they're blinded by the profit margin, where they don't
Josh
care what
had
they
mentioned when we were talking about the voter turnout in the last election. Josh did some checking, and he put this in the chat. He said Washington Post 61% turnout, and Wikipedia says 58.2% turnout. So I don't know where that's
for last election.
Yeah. Now,
okay,
what
I'm thinking about
those numbers, though, is that could be registered voters. 61% of registered voters turned out, and, 58. But the thing about it is if that's the case, then that 17% figure could be right, because it would state 17% of Americans turned out.
you know. You're not counting people underage or people that were in the, like, ex-felons.
So that number still could be correct depending on what those percentages came from. So that would require
that's like anything. That's like unemployment when they give the unemployment rate. It's lower. It sounds like it could be low, but then they're forgetting the underemployed, the people that have given up looking for work.
Right.
I mean, so there's a big percentage. When they say it's like at 9%, it's probably more double that.
We're going into like the last 10 minutes of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that we talk about the big thing that's happening at the end of the month.
Oh, yes. Well, on the 24th.
City of Florida 2013 statewide meeting. So I do want Jennifer to tell us about it, but I want to make sure that everybody's got the link. It's www.gpfl.org/2013meeting with a capital M. So that is, or if you just go to gpfl.org and hit state meeting, it's the second tab on the website. Click in, it will give you all the information. But Jennifer, tell us a little bit about the statewide meeting.
Okay, well, I like to actually call it, we're calling it the annual planning session and meeting, because we want to kind of change that meeting to be like, it kind of has a connotation of like, oh, another meeting, I hate meetings. It's really a planning session. It's where we're going to be working on our strategic plan, on electoral plan, on outreach plans. So it's really a planning session, and I think we need to kind of change paradigm with our speech a little bit and things like that. But it's, you know, that's all going to take, you know, it's easier to slip into the M word. But anyway, on the 24th, we're going to have a kickoff at Sacred Grounds at 6:30, and Betty Pasquella will be speaking about her trips to the West Bank. And then we're going to follow that up with a film called Five Broken Cameras, which was up for an Academy Award. And that'll be a nice, relaxing evening. And then Jill Stein will be here. She's coming Friday. And then the 25th, she'll be with us all day at the meeting. The meeting is basically for Greens. However, at the 25th in the evening, we're going to have an event for everyone and any that would care to come. It's going to be in St. Petersburg, and Jill Stein will be there. She'll speak, and the event will go from 7 to 9, and it's going to be at the St. Petersburg Museum of History. So information for more of the details will be on the website, and then the 26th will conclude the meeting. But we really would like all Greens, all registered Greens, to try to make it. Especially like in this area, because it's in your area in Tampa. So so anyone that's listening from the Tampa area, which is, you know, kind of where we're Anita and I are at, then you know that this is going on, and it's important that you get involved, because, again, we can't always vote in the big elections and find ourselves winning. But in this smaller scale where we vote for our own party, within our own party, there's a better chance of running for something yourself or setting policies that you'd like to see. You've got more of an opportunity to be involved in that as a local activist or just as a Green that's interested in seeing the direction of the Green Party in this state expand and get more candidates and get, you know, stronger outreach. So that's, you know, it's going to be a great weekend. The whole thing will be at the Franciscan Center on Saturday and Sunday for the actual meeting. And, again, everything is on the website. Taco Bus is going to cater the first day's lunch, which will be fun. And there's going to be vegetarian food available. So we've tried to think of everything.
tell us about the location.
Oh, Franciscan Center.
Because this is a really cool place. I couldn't help it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really beautiful.
Oh, yeah. You've got beautiful grounds. It even has like a little maze you can walk. It's the general meeting area would be inside, but there's also a nice patio, screen-in patio we can break out to. There's a pavilion on the grounds, and it's right on the river, the Hillsborough River. So it's just I would call it a very zen place to have a good planning session, because I think inspiration comes when you have space and the type of space that this is, which is, you know, open, peaceful, and it's like basically the end of a street too, so you don't have the traffic. It's just the whole area is going to be very, very nice, pretty secluded, and yet right in the heart of Tampa. So it's very easy to get to, right off of, I believe it's MLK. And I do know that Boulevard is the street. And it's interesting because it's the street's name is Boulevard.
So, oh, okay, I know. Yeah, I know where
that
is. Yeah.
When I first went to look for it, they said North Boulevard. So I'm looking like, oh, okay, North. I was looking for North, like the, you know, like, oh, here's North Boulevard, there's South Boulevard. But it actually was North, and then the street is Boulevard. So that's, it's actually, now that I know where it is, it's like a pretty major street that, there's a light there and everything. So it's pretty easy to find once you know that, get that little thing clear. But, It's going to be an interesting time. Jill Stein is great to meet her. She's very friendly. She's very engaging. And just her presence is something that you have to really experience, because if people did see her on TV, she did real well in her appearances, but to meet her in person is even more. She's a very magnetic personality and very savvy. She's just come back from, she was in Norway, and they had the global Greens with the European Greens were meeting there, and they're working on strategy, and that's kind of, you know, they also have this shadow cabinet that we're doing. And it just, again, those shadow cabinets give people a good idea of what things could be like, and that doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be the way it is right now, even though, you know, it seems to be like there's no way out. There is a way out. There's always a way out. As Jean-Paul Sartre said that.
Josh just provided a breakdown of the voting statistics. Well, it says voter registration statistics.
Mm-hmm.
Total number of Americans eligible to vote are 206 million, a little over
right.
that. Total number of Americans registered to vote are only 146 million. Total number of Americans who voted in the 2008 elections, 131 million. Percent of Americans who voted in the 2008 presidential election would be 64%. State with the highest voter turnout rate was Minnesota at 75%. State with the lowest voter turnout rate was Utah at 53%. So somehow Josh he's an excellent researcher, and he was able to find
it. He does.
www.statisticbrain.com, and it's the page that says voting statistics. So all the information that's just the top part of the graph that I read to you. There's, you know, it's really
right.
down beautifully.
Well,
if anybody wants to go and take a look at that. So, but we're a little over. Actually, we're a little over an hour now.
All right.
I just wanted to make sure that we're covering everything that you wanted to cover about the event coming up. And I did want to mention that we are going to be doing a silent auction. That's going to be one of the ways that we fundraise, F-U-N. We're asking anybody that attends to bring three items that you don't want anymore. that could be reused, repurposed, recycled, or re-gifted to somebody else that can go on the silent auction, and it'll be just like Christmas.
Yeah, well, and then actually beyond that, too, we're going to have some prizes. So what I did was, we printed up our new T-shirts, and they're going to say, unchain yourself. It's going to have a drawing of a chain and, like, the cuffs broken open. And just basically like slave chains, only, you know, so these they're broken. And unchain yourself, shop local, invest local, live green, and then, you know, the our website, gp.org. And those shirts will be our new shirt. We're going to be kind of like promoting voting, or not voting, but for shopping locally. Well, actually voting local, putting your vote, put your money as your vote, and spend locally. And don't go to large chains. Try to go to smaller businesses that keep money in the area. That's people that actually, you know, you get more for your money when you go to places like that. Because I tell people that I'm never shopping at Walmart. I've been able to travel all over the world. I've been able to save that money. So, it, you know, you don't really save money when you shop at these discount large discounters. And you get such better service, and things are done quicker. And so it just feels good to shop locally. But anyway, what we're going to do is promote from a bookstore that's one of the – it's a rival of Amazon. It's called Powell Books. So we're going to have some prizes from there. And it's pretty well known in Oregon, and you know, it's a national. I mean, you can order books on the web, of course, from them, but they have developed in that area, and I think it's maybe they have, you know, more than one store there in Oregon. But anyway, it's just nice to have an alternative to the big things like, you know, Amazon and so on. So yeah, we'll have that. So I mean, there's going to be a lot of good times. We're also, our theme, before I go, the last thing I would say is that the theme for the meeting is going to be open the elections, open the debates, Green Party for First Amendment rights. I picked that First Amendment. So, well, thanks, Anita, for letting me.
Yeah, well, thanks for being on the show. I'd love to have you on anytime you want to be on. I want to thank our sponsors again, and I also want to remind people that if you want to hear shows like this in the future, please make sure you hit us up at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com, and we have a GoFundMe link there. It's a little box. Click in. You can donate as little as $5, $10, $20, whatever you feel given to whatever you feel moved to give is going to help us stay on the air. I just need to pay the internet bill, and that's the seed money. So that's where that money goes. And we're going to have another show next week, and we invite everybody to come to the Green Party meeting. See more information at gpfl.org. And Jennifer, thank you so much for everything you're doing, and you're working really to make this a success, and it's greatly appreciated. And I'm just going to close with Grace Jones, Slave.
Okay. And I'll be back if we ever do another lobby for that.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm ready to do it.
All right.
Have a good night, everybody. Right, and we'll take you out with Slave to the Rhythm. Thank you.
All right. Cool. Later.
Bye.